on, we'll get started on the class for today. So we, as was said last week, we looked at the idea of what is theosophy. And today we're looking at the great founders of the theosophical movement. Now, the interesting thing is that in order to understand this panel, there is a difference between the theosophical movement and the theosophical society. So this is what this has of the panel discussion will be about, is the differences between the movement and the society. And so to begin with, we need to put in perspective that there are major differences between the movement and the society. The Theosophical movement was basically formed in what we would look at as being a spiritual world, but by living men, humans, who had risen above the creeds, nations, castes, and people. They had perfected themselves. And this talk will be looking at them more closely. Now, the ideas that have been passed on, these ideas are ancient. And the philosophers, and ages ago, we're looking at the ancient philosophers used to discuss these ideas. And the interesting thing is that it has gone back to these ancient philosophers and has continued. That's the main idea of the difference between the society and the movement, is that it has continued. It has always been here. So once it gets, and we'll discuss what is going on now, and it will always be. These ideas are timeless. They are ancient. They are spiritual in nature. The Theosophical movement, and this is the movement we're talking about, the movement was started by being given the impulse and the message. And this kind of gives us comfort to know that it always will. It will always succeed. And it began when materialism throughout the world was rampant. So when we look at this idea of the great founders of the Theosophical movement, we have to understand that we are not talking about H.P. Blavatsky, William Q. Judge, and Colonel Olcott. They are three personages who founded the Theosophical Society, and they brought the Theosophical movement to the West, which is a visible organization, but the society is not considered universal, nor is it continuous, because depending upon the people involved, it can change, and it has changed. So there is one doctrine of the Theosophical Society, and that is universal brotherhood. There is no other creed that needs to be believed or followed. All we are looking at is this idea of universal brotherhood. It is only about how we treat others. Anyone of any faith can attend a Theosophical meeting, and the perspective is always, has always been, and always will be the idea of universal brotherhood. We want to read a a portion of an article written by Mr. Judge called it, and it's entitled The Theosophical Movement. And it gives a better explanation than what this student can give. And we will comment on different portions of it as we go along. There is a very great difference between the Theosophical movement and any Theosophical society. The movement is moral, ethical, spiritual, universal, invisible, save in effect, and continuous. And that's what we mentioned before, and that's a very important idea, is that it has gone back to the ancient times and it will continue. A society formed for theosophical work is a visible organization, in effect, a machine for conserving energy and putting it to use. It is not, nor can it be universal, nor is it continuous. Organized theosophical bodies are made by men for their better cooperation, but being mere outer shells, they must change from time to time as human defects come out. As the times change, and as the great underlying spiritual movement compels such alterations. So this is an important concept, that the Theosophical Society is made by men. The movement are the masters and the adepts. And it is just, it's like we think we can look at it as just being like a bubble. And inside that bubble, there's people, there's ideas, there's all of that that's being expressed. But when times change, like, and we know now when we listen to the news that people are leaving, organized religion becoming more spiritual. So as time goes on, things change, people's ideas change. So that affects the Theosophical Society. But the ideas that the Theosophical movement puts forth never change. The Theosophical movement being continuous, it is to be found in all times and in all nations. Wherever thought has struggled to be free, wherever spiritual ideas, as opposed to forms and dogmatisms, have been promulgated, there the great movement is to be discerned. So the society of over 100 years ago was part of the Theosophical movement. And we can look at Luther's Reformation as well as the struggle between science and religion. And it has often been said that the U.S. War of Independence was an expression as well. And it was, there were a portion of that has to do with brotherhood. So during Madame Blavatsky's time, there were some intersocietal disagreements. This is interesting that she said, causing her to state that it was better to do away with the society rather than destroy the brotherhood meaning the Theosophical movement. So she was so disappointed with how things were going in the Theosophical Society, that this was her feelings, that she felt as though just disband the society and we'll go ahead and, hopefully at some point the brotherhood will reappear. So one of the things that we do want to explain is that just to mention regarding the development of the United Lodge of Theosophists and how It brings forward the true theosophical movement. The ULT was formed by Robert Crosby in 1909. After Mr. Judge passed, a woman by the name of Catherine Tingley was raised up as Mr. Judge's successor. In 1904, the teachings, and this is a quote, the teachings and philosophy of theosophy had suffered an almost complete eclipse by the methods and sensational program instituted by Mrs. Tingley. And at this point, Mr. Crosby decided that he was going to pull away from the Theosophical Society, and with just a few companions, he brought upon the world the United Lodge of Theosophists in 1909. And to this day, the United Lodge of Theosophy is now an international group. It's not an organization. So to this day, the ULT carries on the original lines laid down by the masters, with HPB and Mr. Judge as their companions. The dissemination of the principles of the philosophy of theosophy. Focus should always be on the ideas, the principles, and objectives, never on the ideas of living personalities. And one of the things that one notices looking at the literature in ULT, which was a suggestion by Mr. Crosby, was this idea of impersonality, because one notices that the literature put forth in ULT is not signed by any person. And so when we're looking at never on the ideas, living personalities, and no one is, as said in the declaration, we have no constitution, bylaws, nor officers, the sole bond between its associates being that basis. So impersonality is a major idea. We don't have a president. There's no one. Each lodge functions independently along the lines laid down by HPB and Mr. Judge from the elder brothers and from the ideas that have been brought forward from the past. So that is basically the differences between ULT, the Theosophical Society, and the Theosophical Movement, which is continuous and permeates ULT. Thank you.
So we'll present here issues concerning the great founders. And to put that together, we can do no better than to just share ideas that are found in their messages to HPB and Judge. And also we'll investigate a few things about the masters and about the founding of the society that are in HPB and Mr. Judge's writings as well. So from that, we can glean together an intuitive understanding and a plain understanding of what their purpose is and what it was when what we call the modern day Theosophical movement was founded in the end of the 19th century. So here's a quote or two from the masters. The purpose of the founding of the Theosophical movement is not for the individual and determined purpose of attaining nirvana, which, after all, is only an exalted and glorious state of selfishness. Our purpose for the Theosophical movement is but the self-sacrificing pursuit of the best means to lead on the right path our neighbor, to cause to benefit by that path as many of our fellow creatures as we possibly can. This constitutes the true theosophist. Another statement. The theosophical movement was chosen as the cornerstone, the foundation of the future religions of humanity. To achieve the proposed object, a greater, wiser, and especially a more benevolent intermingling of the high and the low, the alpha and the omega of society is determined upon. So we could ask, what was it during her time that HPB could bring such a great impact into the world in the third quarter of the 19th century, as opposed to those who were on the scene in the third quarter of previous centuries? And Mr. Judge makes it clear. He says that the masters chose the United States in which to found the modern day theosophical movement because it's an environment where, at a time and place, thought and religion are free. And hence, the time was come to make it more plain and more definite to the public. We had never thought about that before in the previous centuries, where, in fact, when these broad ideas are introduced to the public and discussed in centuries gone by, that caused, as we all know, a lot of problems for the good people of the day. And so HPB was able to make a much bigger impact because of the freedom to write and to speak and to think, where the Theosophical was founded, Theosophical movement was founded here in the United States. Now, after HPB passed, there was a manuscript found among her writings, in particular, in her own handwriting, regarding what's titled the Original Program of the Theosophical Society. So we can note to say it was in her handwriting, but not published by her per se. These are ideas that she received and that she was working on. The Original Program of the Theosophical Society, and this is what she wrote, part of what she wrote, of course. In order to leave no room for equivocation, the members of the Theosophical movement have to be reminded of the origin of the society in 1875. Sent by her masters, sent to the United States of America in 1873 for the purpose of organizing a group of workers on a psychic plane. 2 years later, the writer received orders from her master and teacher to form the nucleus of a regular society whose objects were broadly stated as follows: 1, universal brotherhood; 2, no distinction to be made by the member between races, creeds, or social positions; 3, to study the philosophies of the East, presenting them gradually to the public in various works that would interpret exo in various works that would interpret exoteric religions in the light of esoteric teachings; 4, to oppose materialism and theological dogmatism in every possible way, by demonstrating the existence of occult forces unknown to science in nature, unknown to science, occult forces in nature, and the presence of psychic and spiritual powers in man, trying at the same time to enlarge the views of the spiritualists by showing them that there are other many other agencies, spiritualists, today we would use the word psychics generally, people who dabble in psychism, trying at the same time to enlarge the views of the spiritualists by showing them that there are other, many other agencies at work in the production of phenomena besides the spirits of the dead. Many other agencies besides the spirits of the dead. Superstition had to be exposed. She's still writing. Superstition had to be exposed and avoided, and occult forces, beneficent and maleficent, ever surrounding us and manifesting in their presence in various ways, demonstrated to the best of our ability. Such was the program in its broad features. The two chief founders were not to, okay, now this is what she's saying. The two founders, in this sense, she and Mr. Judge, the two chief founders were not told what they had to do, how they had to bring about and quicken the growth of the movement and the results desired, nor had they any definite ideas given them concerning the outward organization. She says, all of this being left entirely within themselves. They're given the mission, they're given the ideas, but not told how to do. See, this reminds us of Arjuna saying, well, Krishna, you're saying this and that. They look similar. I'm not sure if I should do this or that. You're the master. Tell me what to do. And both Krishna and her masters respond, do as best seemeth unto you. Interestingly, Mr. Judge was one to say exactly that to his pupils. In letters of, that have helped me, there's a letter there, which in which he responds to an inquirer who's perplexed about the direction that she should take in her theosophical life. And his response is, just like the master said, all this being left entirely within themselves. And Mr. Judge responds, fix your thoughts again on those elder brothers. Work for them, serve them, and they will help through the right, appropriate means and no other. To meditate on the higher self is difficult. Seek then the masters. So now let's think about this. An individual can read theosophy very definitely, can grasp the fundamentals, can very definitely make use of the fundamentals, can understand theosophy. But the work of the ULT cannot really be understood without the recognition that within great nature, masters are objective facts. This idea of masters is not an abstract concept. It's not just interesting to talk about. The masters take part in the government and natural order of things. Throughout all epochs, periods of evolution spanning all civilizations, Mr. Judge tells us, mankind has never been without a friend. Now, here is an excerpt from a master's letter that shed some light on the urgency in the third quarter of the 19th century. We'll just mention, before we read this, realize this is the end of the third quarter of the 19th century. There are certain causes already put in movement in the West, the effects of which on higher planes are evident to those who have the faculties to see those effects, and thus the urgency for the Theosophical movement. And their statement is, the intellectual portion of mankind seems to be fast dividing into two classes. The one unconsciously preparing for itself long periods of temporary annihilation or states of consciousness owing to the deliberate surrender of intellect and its imprisonment in the narrow grooves of bigotry and superstition, a process which cannot fail to lead to the utter deformation of the intellectual principle. Now, those are a lot of words to say. The one portion he's talking about of the intellectual side of mankind is losing itself in false dogmatic religion. And that is a big problem. The second portion of intellectual mankind is unrestrainedly indulging in its animal propensities with the deliberate intention of submitting to annihilation, pure and simple, in case of failure, and to millenniums of degradation after physical dissolution. Those intellectual classes reacting upon the. Okay, so that statement, the second, what they're saying is the other intellectuals have thrown out religion. They don't have a basis of morality. They're not looking for a basis of ethics. Religion has failed them. They're just sticking to intellectuality per se. So there's the two, those who hold to the false dogmatic religions and limit themselves to the false ideas therein, and those realize they have no time, but they don't have an alternative. There's not something presenting itself where they can step up to. They're just throwing out religion, and in doing so, perhaps throwing out the baby with the bathwater. So he goes on. Those intellectual classes reacting upon those two classes reacting upon the ignorant masses, which they attract and which look up to them as noble and fit examples to be followed, they degrade and morally ruin those that they should be protecting and guiding between the degrading superstition and the still more degrading brutal materialism. The white dove of truth has hardly room whereon to rest her weary, unwelcome feet. So the message is, mankind needs to wake up. This is the end of the 19th century. Mankind needs to wake up and wake up fast. And that's the purpose of the Theosophical movement. Now, we all know what started happening in the early 20th century and what followed from there. So let's take a look now. Just how and through whom have some of these other special efforts been made by the masters in the last quarter of certain centuries? How have results been attempted by the Theosophical movement? Well, the masters have acted through the Theosophical movement through folks such as Jakob Boehme, Count Saint-Germain, Count Saint-Martin, and Cagliostro. There's a whole body of literature in the ULT, including Swedenborg, that shows the influence on the masters on people who could influence the masses. All through those centuries. And when we read about these people, we have to realize that some of them were conscious agents, others were unconscious agents, didn't realize they were being influenced as such, but all had developed, so to speak, to a degree, adept powers that when they spoke and used their influence for what they intuitively knew to be true, it affected so much of mankind. As to the manner of the okay, so but the difference though, in the case of HPB, we'll just finish with this. In the case of HPB, we have one here who was fully aware of her work, of her masters, fully aware of every stage of what she was doing and what was at work when she was working. Thus, we have her greater power to bring about greater effects around the entire globe in her efforts, which were, as she says in the Key to Theosophy, to raise the buddhi-manas of the entire race. So these are some ideas that are presented in terms of masters and the Theosophical movement. We'd like to open the meeting to any contributions and questions along these lines. Theosophy Hall.
Okay, so what's the takeaway for inquirers who are brand new to theosophy? It may seem like a riddle. There's a continuous movement that's always working behind the scenes, and there's periodic expressions. And ULT claims that we are, in a sense, a better, we hate to use that word, but a better, more true expression to the original plan as to other groups that have gotten involved with politics and fundraising and causes and all kinds of things that may be good in and of themselves, but they're distractions from the primary purpose, which is to form a nucleus. To form the nucleus, or rather, of a universal brotherhood, which of course is sexless and includes everyone, all walks of life.
Well, we don't want to say that ULT is better. What we can say, though, given examples of what it is, and what it is that it broke away from the Theosophical Society because the Theosophical Society was diluting the original teachings put forth by HPB and Mr. Judge. As was said in the second talk, HPB did a lot of her writing at the behest of the masters, and she knew what was going on. It's not like she was a passive, vessel. She knew, and we have those writings here now, and they are like the pure writings. They haven't been altered. There's no degradation of any of the original writings that ULT puts forth. And we wanted to just make a comment too in regards to this. The declaration of ULT puts forth the ideas that it was put together by Mr. Crosby, but they were many writings from Mr. Judge. So it just gives a basis of what ULT is. And we know it says a profounder conviction of universal brotherhood. That is it. Anybody can come to Theosophy and be a part of it as long as the idea, the conviction of universal brotherhood is part of them. So we don't want to say that it is better than the Theosophical Society. It is a movement from the Theosophical movement brought forward, and it is here for those companions who want it.
If we could add to that, it could be rightfully said that the ULT, what makes ULT better or whatever, the ULT isn't better or worse per se. The ULT, it's almost like the ULT isn't anything. The ULT doesn't do anything. The ULT is simply a group of students who have decided among themselves or within one's own self that, I'm a student of theosophy. I've learned that there's a lot to be said for the original programs of the masters, for the original teachings. They are worth learning, applying in my life, sharing with other people. And it's these kind of folks who come together from time to time at these meetings or at study groups wherever in the world and share these ideas. That's all that the ULT does. Now, it's on an individual basis first. So whereas ULT really has nothing to say and nothing to compare to a theosophical society as one versus the other, because it's just a completely different concept. But all those who consider themselves a student of theosophy and participate in the theosophical movement, whether they know anything about the ULT or not, are all united in the efforts of the ULT. And was mentioned, do we have rules in the ULT? Well, really, the invitation is, above and beyond all else, if you're going to make the time and the effort to study theosophy and to come to a ULT meeting, the invitation is just to bear in mind, to investigate this idea of universal brotherhood, to investigate the value and prove to yourself the value of it. If you don't, and if you don't care to, we're not, we don't close the door to anyone, but chances are you're going to get really bored at all of our meetings. And because that's what the meetings are based on, and that's what the study of theosophy is based on. SL, you had your hand up, and then JCS. SL? Oh.
Yes, I noticed my screen is frozen, but you can hear me, right?
Yes, we can hear you.
So I believe it was in the first presentation, a extract from an unpublished letter was given, where HPB refers to being sent in 1873 to the United States, and that the lines with a society had already been laid down on the psychic or the astral plane. That means, and it was just in 1875, the time for the establishment of those lines of work on the physical plane had come. So the real society, we might say, is on the inner planes. It is not entirely of the earth. And would explain why HPB says that the Theosophical Society itself cannot be destroyed. So if it was just the physical organization that comes and goes and can change and be corrupted, of course it could be destroyed. But the real society on that inner plane, which is no different from the principles given out in the ULT, cannot be destroyed. So we might say that ULT, part of the purpose is not just to put forth the ideas, but as it says, to demonstrate that what binds us all, what unites us all as a society, if you want to use the word, is a similarity of aim, purpose, teaching, a purpose, guidelines, you might say, which are on the inner planes and not, and are therefore universal and are not particularized on the physical.
Well,
thank you.
If we look back to ancient times with the ancient philosophers, they put forth these ideas on the inner plane. And it has been in different forms, it has been carried forward to the present day. And as was just said in the comment, that as long as there is impressions in people of the ideas on the spiritual inner plane, it can never die. And we know that that's what HPB was talking about, that with all the dissension that was going on, that if the Theosophical Society disappeared, it didn't really matter because the movement will always carry forth.
JCS.
JC, I think
JCS.
you had a hand up.
You know, what came to mind was the second chapter of the Gita, which is way older than 5,000 years ago. And it is a recording of the Sankhya doctrine, which is philosophical in some ways, an internal, invisible kind of concept. And then the Karma Yoga doctrine, the yoga doctrine of an outer expression of balance and service and compassion. It just seems that that second chapter of the Gita explains in full the entire scope and sway of the Theosophical movement.
Yes, thank you on that. One of the things that came forth for us in doing this study is just how we want to pervasive in a good way the Theosophical movement has been over the course of time, that it's always been. And when newcomers come in to the lodge, we always like, when they ask, what is Theosophy? We always like to say, well, if you take all the major religions that are out there, strip away all the dogma, the ritual, all of that, what is left are the ideas of the Theosophical movement. SL?
Oh, so in an article called Plain Theosophical Traces, Mr. Judge makes the point that the great founders of the Theosophical movement, speaking through the Mahatmas, are not just working through the Theosophical Society at that time, but there were many individuals and movements that they could work through. So that's important for us to keep in mind. But then he says, HPB said, nevertheless, the society bears the seal of the lodge or the lodge of adepts. And of course, we know that there is a seal connected with the society. And that seal appears on all the straight line theosophical literature, which is promulgated primarily in ULT. And that the motto of the society, which is demonstrated by those publications, is that there is no religion higher than truth. So we think it was mentioned in the talk that the purpose is not just brotherhood, but also the establishment of a center where people of all nations and races could search peacefully together in harmony for what is true.
JCS?
And further, that truth is unbridled, that search is unbridled, and that each individual soul, regardless of background and regardless of skandhas and the conditions of an incarnation, each individual entity, each soul is capable of that search and that that proof of the truth of whatever the discussion is about. So there's not dogma, creed, priestcraft, outside source. We honor the work of Blavatsky and Judge. We reverence the work of the masters that stand behind and retain the same soulful integrity that masters Blavatsky and Judge have, so that each and all for ourselves. make the effort to understand and fully commit and fully apply the philosophy.
Well, that's the idea. When we believe that HPB did mention at one time that not to follow her, but that it's her teachings, and it's not even her teachings because she received them from the masters, and it's them, it's the teachings on them, from them, that we should follow. So we have two questions, comments here in Theosophy Hall.
Well, one of the biggest misunderstandings is that a God, that are these Mahatmas God, or is there a God in the Theosophical movement, per se?
So what is the Theosophical concept of God? Well, we do not put forth the idea of an outside anthropomorphic God. What is felt is that each person has what we consider the God within, and that is our higher nature, and that we need to try to, keep our mind porous to the dictates of the soul. But there is not a God that is prayed to. There is not a God that we beseech for good things to happen to us. So we have another comment in Theosophy Hall.
Yes, we do respect and reverence the masters who have perfected themselves because they went through everything we have gone through before. And they've reached a point where they can be a beneficent force. They're not gods per se, but they are. The whole thing is, we're not poor, miserable sinners. We're actually rays of the divine, and that our natures are perfectible. And they have done that, and they have refused to go on to that nirvanic state, which one can take. But when one takes that nirvanic state, they separate themselves from humanity. There's an extinction, in a sense. So also, belief in the masters is not necessary. It's not a requirement. You can accept or reject it. So we are grateful and we show reverence, but we don't worship or pray to them. That's about it.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, we are raised. It's not that we have a soul that we can lose. It's that we are souls, and we are on our spiritual progress to perfection, which the adepts and the masters have. They have also done the same thing. They've been humans just like us.
We would mention, along the line of, the nature of a master, we recall a visitor once asking the question, trying to grasp this, obviously in the light of what that person had learned in their religious experience. And they asked, so is a master, was it a really, really spiritual person who's dead now? And just stays around? And we found it very interesting because it's a fair question. The real answer is actually the master is a wise person who has, because they've overcome the false ideas of identifying with the body, it's not that they're dead, it's that they're alive and know that they always have been and always will be. At any time, they may or may not take up another physical body, but they are living beings. They are real beings who are with us through all the cycles to assist and guide as needs be according to our karma.
Yes, Theosophy Hall.
Well, we often equate the Mahatmas or perfected beings with our higher self. It said that within our very nature, all these things are known, and it's just that we have forgotten them. So that we can't deny the masters, because then we really deny the philosophy, because the philosophy says that man, we are perfectible. So we are not poor, miserable sinners. We are on a journey back to spirit.
And it's interesting, because in the beginning of this period of evolution, we were given all the information that we need to know. But over the course of time, we have forgotten that. But it is still inherent in our being. And when we talk about being, perfectible, that is what we need to do, is, as was said earlier, try to make our minds porous to the dictates of the soul, which is timeless. Theosophy Hall?
And how do we do that? How do we become with your spiritual knowledge?
So how do we become perfected? What do we need to do to travel along that path? Well, we're talking about universal brotherhood, and in the Bhagavad Gita, we learn that that doing our duty, expecting nothing in return, is part of that perfection, that we don't expect to get anything, any reward for doing what it is we need to do. And to be, we have all these hands up and it's just about over. SL had your hand up first.
Yes, to go back to the comment made in the presentations and reading from one of the master's letters, the movement, the purpose of the movement is not our individual spiritual salvation or development or developing of occult powers. Rather, the movement, as impelled by them, is for the purpose of helping our neighbor. So our own spiritual advancement, perfection, should be put aside. I mean, that will occur under law anyway, but we should be thinking more about what is in the best interest of to be a friend to our neighbor, just like the Mahatmas are friends to humanity.
All right, thank you. Real quick.
There is a reward. It's gaining a perspective on life and living in our environment. And as we always say, being better to help and teach others. But the perspective is some of the lines or some of the shackles are released, and we realize that we're not these bodies. We're so much more than that, and not to be drawn to become and disheartened by the crushing materialism and the whole success culture, the go, go, go. It's a breath of fresh air.
Yes, thank you very much. And we did forget to mention, and this is the last thing, the United Lodge of Theosophists is financially sustained entirely by voluntary contributions. Its activities depend similarly on voluntary offerings in time and work. All are invited to participate, but no obligation is imposed or implied. And we want to thank everyone for participating, and hope to see you all on Wednesday.